And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
The Hagmann and Hagmann Report. Boy, I'll tell you what, we've got a great show for you planned tonight. Just be ready. Paul McGuire on fire. Paul McGuire on fire tonight. Folks, thanks for joining us. Thanks for tuning in to the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. Go to HagmannandHagmann.com. The Hagmann, it's the place for show information, to watch the show information. And of course, HagmannReport.com for news and information, articles of extreme interest and relevance. HagmannReport.com. Glad to be coming at you tonight. Doug and Joe Hagmann. I'm Doug Hagmann with my son, fellow investigator Joe Hagmann. Something I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. Again, what a great show lined up for you with Paul McGuire, author. You know, we just got his book and his new book, Prophecy of the Future of America 2016-2017. What a great read. It's just fantastic. And we're going to be talking a lot about this tonight. How many people caught the Hillary and Trump question and answer session last night? That's rather interesting, right?
A lot of backlash and commentary and interesting stuff going on with that.
Now we're talking about an ear pearl.
NYPD actually confirmed that Clinton was wearing an invisible earpiece. Well, during the live town hall meeting that they had last night.
And it's interesting, too. I don't know, Joe. It's interesting when we get into this. You see people saying, well, don't focus on that. Don't focus on that. It's everything that, you know, don't focus on the cough or her health. Don't focus on the earpiece. It's all a distraction. And pretty soon, there's nothing but distractions, and you're left with nothing to talk about. You know, talk about the issues. Talk about the substance. Well, yeah, that too. All of it is relevant, and it's just amazing what we see taking place, folks. I want to draw your attention. Portions of this broadcast brought to you by ZipRecruiter.com. Now, this is a message to all the small businesses, big businesses, business people out there looking to hire, even if you're just one person looking to hire maybe that nanny, maybe that executive officer, maybe somebody to handle your accounts payable, whatever it might be, or accounts receivable, whatever. If you're hiring, do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? ZipRecruiter.com. Folks, posting your job at one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. No. You've got to, if you want to find the perfect hire, folks, you need to post your job on all the top websites, all the top sites. And now you can. It's never been easier with ZipRecruiter. That's right, ZipRecruiter.com. You can post your job to 100 plus job sites, including the social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, with just a single click. It's never been easier. I know two individuals who have actually used ZipRecruiter, two business owners, one of a very large business and another, well, on the opposite end of the spectrum, a smaller business. Both found candidates in their respective cities. More on this later, but right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Again, more on that later.
More in this job market. You want to have your resume out in as many places as you can get it. If you're looking for work, this is definitely an avenue you want to use.
Well, you know, the people that and the businesses that are looking for the hires, the businesses who are looking for the best candidate, when you're hiring people, you can find candidates in your city, anywhere, nationwide, and there's no juggling emails, no calls to your office. You quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire just the right person very fast. That's why ZipRecruiter is welcomed by so many business people out there. And we endorse them, and know people have used ZipRecruiter with great success. Again, Paul McGuire is our guest tonight. Coming on, well, he's on deck right now. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, he's ready to go. His latest book, Paul McGuire, A Prophecy of the Future of America, 2016-2017. Folks, also check out the Paul McGuire Report. It's a radio show you can listen to live each weekday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Again, the links are in the bottom of the, underneath the video to his website and to the radio show. And that's the Paul McGuire Report, 4 to 6 p.m. Definitely bookmark that or subscribe to the podcast where you can. Paul, it's great to have you back on the show.
Gentlemen, it's great to be back on the show, and I'm laughing only because I prepared this article for you to post up on your website, and I saved it. But I forgot the name that I saved it under. So I'm thousands of articles. But I will have it to you. And I'll have
all
it.
Right.
It was written specifically for this program, and I just have to find it, and I will find it. So you'll be getting it sent to you. And that's usually a good thing, though. It's amazing to me that, like, you know, when I speak at conferences and stuff, in fact, the conference where we were all together and spent some time together doing interviews and stuff. I think it was in Orlando, right? Was it Orlando?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's where we spent the majority of our time. Yes, Orlando was the time that we spent.
Yeah, because at, was it Orlando where you had the, when you interviewed me, I felt I was on a set of Close Encounters of the Third Kind with the giant lights on?
Yes, that was in Orlando.
That was really, just so your listeners will know, oh, that was a weird conference. I mean, it was a great conference, but it was weird for me because I taped, I believe, I was taping the Apocalypse and the End Times shows, right?
Yeah, you were doing some taping of your own.
Okay.
Yeah, retina burn, by the way, retina burn. Those lights went right through our retinas. We couldn't see for like a week afterwards. You know, see straight.
I spoke at the conference. I was interviewed by you guys at the conference. But then in a 3-day period, I taped, 34 or 35 30-minute TV shows of Apocalypse and the End Times, you know, the God TV shows. And so, like, I was like, exhausted. And then, your thing was really relief because I was really studying my notes for the conference, and whenever that happens, I mean, really, it's inevitable. I go over my notes. I'm just like meticulous, and I don't think almost most of the time I never use the notes. The minute I get to the podium, the notes go out the window. I don't even know why I bother doing the notes. So, like I said, it's usually a good thing when these things happen, because then stuff comes fresh. But back to your interview. It was a great interview, and it was great meeting your audience, as I told you a while back. But those lights, man, were so bright, and so we were staring out into the audience. I couldn't see anything but these giant square lights. So that was fun, though. You know, I enjoyed it.
It was fun.
And you know, we have mini versions of those lights here in our studio, I think.
Yeah, we do. We do. Yeah. We got six of them, and they're about a tenth the size of those big ones, but they're the very bright ones. But they're set up in a way where they kind of shield our eyes, and there's Eric's got it nicely set up. It's not so blinding.
Well, one thing I want to add on to what you just said, the purpose of this is not to make a partisan comment, because I would say this regarding any politician. And that was, you know, that was basically a debate. I mean, it wasn't the official debate, but it was a debate. And, you know, that's like having a cheat sheet when you're taking an exam in school. You know, you pull out a piece of paper that you're hiding with a cheat sheet. But this is even worse because you've got who knows how many researchers ready to feed you questions through the earpiece that you have hidden in your ear. And so that gives you a very, very unfair advantage over your political opponent. That would be the equivalent of, you know, having a swimming meet at the Olympics and one athlete is allowed to take steroids and all these super, you know, super performance enhancing drugs, and he wins, you know, all the gold medals, but he's like, you know, the bionic man. He's charged up on all kinds of really powerful stuff. Well, that's not a fair competition. So the idea that two political candidates can debate and one has, she's not really debating by herself, she's got a team of experts that are feeding her questions to debate the other politician. So Trump is in actuality not just debating one person, he's debating a team through that earpiece. That's an unfair advantage. And that would be an unfair advantage if a Republican was to do that, if Trump was to do it. I mean, that should not be allowed. I mean, that should be not allowed in any debate. And the media should challenge somebody on it because it's unfair. Because the person who's getting up there answering the questions, and let's say they sound intelligent, and man, they seem to have this amazing recall of all kinds of facts and data and statistics, and the vast majority of Americans go, wow, this person really is qualified. They really know their stuff. But it's a complete falsehood because it's being fed to them through an earpiece. Go ahead.
You know what, Paul? It's interesting because we get excoriated and spanked for even asking the question, raising the issue. Was that an earpiece, or was that just a shiny ear, for instance? But remember
who would say that to you? It's a matter of record. The police issued a report saying it was a technological earpiece. So that's not even a matter of dispute. Who would challenge you on that?
Well, there are many people out there that will send emails or say you can't say that because it's really not, it was the camera angle. It was the shiny. Yeah.
I saw the picture.
Brother, man. I look. I'm right there with you, but remember back in 2004, George Bush had that strange-looking square with a line down the. It was very visible in the 2004 debates.
I didn't know. He had a earpiece too.
No, not an earpiece, but people were questioning. The media was just hounding him back in 2004. I can't remember if people remember this, how the media hounded him. There was a square, not an indentation, but kind of like a ridge on his back, and it looked like a wire, a pretty thick wire coming down from that. It would be like a UHF antenna almost. It seemed like, and a wire coming down from that. But man, pictures are being floated on various websites now saying, hey, Bush, you know, had something apparently, you know, in his back. But the media was like right on that. And now today the media is just slamming anyone who would suggest that she had an earpiece. Even though, as you stated, NYPD, yeah, it's a matter of record.
And this also begs a question. There's an unclassified email that was released by WikiLeaks where Huma Abedin sent an email to Hillary Clinton on September 24th, 2009, asking, did you take your earpiece or do I need to get it? Which other people are asking, is this earpiece or has this earpiece been used in the past, specifically from her testimony on Benghazi to the missing email scandal? And is this one of the many times that she's used this in a public forum or in a hearing forum, or is this the first time? So there are a lot of questions about what's going on with the earpiece and who was feeding her the information. But as you said, Paul, the NYPD has confirmed that it was a piece of stealth communication. It was a stealth earpiece that operates on a bandwidth from 300 hertz to 4 kilohertz.
And Paul, one last thing. We use those, not we, well...
not these ones.
The DOJ and the undercover operations. I've seen those in use. But you're talking about two generations ago in terms of technology. But I don't think anyone can deny that's use. But go ahead, sir.
Well, yeah, and the issue here is not. This is not a partisan issue. This is not like you know, trying to show favoritism or attack one party over another. That there should be a rule that would apply to both Republicans and Democrats, to apply to Trump and Hillary or anybody who runs, that you're not allowed to use an earpiece because it gives you an unfair advantage. It's not you. I mean, I don't understand why anybody would be criticizing you, because if the shoe was on the other foot, it would be giving, let's say Trump was using this earpiece, it gives him an unfair advantage. So you're not really having a debate between the two candidates. You're having a debate between one candidate and a team of people, of which one person is feeding advice and knowledge and statistics and data through an earpiece that makes that candidate look better than they really are. And that rule should be applied to Republicans and Republicans and Democrats. I remember when I was first doing my original radio show, the Paul McGuire Show from L.A., and it was, you know, it was a live interactive talk show, and the internet technologies when we first started the show, because the show ran for 10 years, were just starting to take off. And I would get these callers, and they would be using their search engines, and they sounded like geniuses. And it took me a little while to realize that they weren't geniuses at all. They were simply cheating with their internet. And then there were other radio talk shows in the market, some of them Christians, who pretended to be Bible experts. And so they would sound very eloquent. They knew, you know, Greek, Hebrew. They knew everything about every single verse. But the reality is they didn't know anything about anything. And they were being, they had a team in the studio with them that fed him the information with computers and everything else. And that's a fictitious way of doing things. I remember when I did a lot of debates on Fox News Network, Fox Business Channel, CNN, and you know, you often see like Hannity or whatever, they're more conspicuous earpieces. They're not like hidden. And you see them on most of the news networks. And you're given directions by a director in the other room. Of course, they're not feeding you answers and they're not telling you what to do, or at least they weren't doing that to me. But they'll say, look into this camera or look into that camera, and you know, we'll be back in a break in a couple of minutes, or we'll go to you, you know, in the next segment, we'll start with you asking the question to you. And so you have to look in the camera, act natural and normal, carry on a debate or whatever, but at the same time, somebody's, you know, talking to you. And that, of course, there's nothing wrong with, but this is called cheating. I mean, that's what it is. It's cheating. You couldn't do that in any place. Can you imagine somebody doing that in a courtroom?
No, and I mean, the question still has to be asked. I mean, how much does she use this earpiece, and has it been used in the past? And yeah. I couldn't imagine if she had it, you know, throughout her email scandal testimony. Not that it would have mattered with the outcome or the Benghazi testimony, but who knows how often that is there just for that purpose, to
right.
encourage her to feed her information and to give her an advantage, as you said.
And in addition to the deceptive use of an earpiece, too, you know, for the comment that she made as well about no American lives lost in Benghazi. Now, I'm not exactly sure what the exact quote was, or in Libya. I shouldn't say Benghazi, but in Libya, to make that statement and to have that statement go unchallenged is despicable, considering the fact that the compound, the CIA compound in Benghazi, was attacked on the anniversary of 9/11, and of course she blamed that obscure internet video, and it's just ridiculous. But to have her statement about Libya go unchallenged as well is deceptive as well, and the media runs with it. Paul, what the heck? I mean, the media is just given her complete, I don't know, insulation.
Well, we have an Orwellian media. It's just like George Orwell's novel, 1984. except it happened later than 1984. And as most of your listeners know, in 1984, it was a totalitarian society run by Big Brother, and the thought police controlled your thoughts. The media was totally controlled. It was totally propagandistic. They had these mind control slogans like freedom is slavery, you know, and other odd things, you know, twisting statements that meant the opposite. And the totally controlled society was totally controlled based on this all-powerful media that also regulated people's thoughts. And Big Brother, of course. Now, here's the irony. 1984, I forgot when it was written. It was written a long time ago. A long time ago. I believe it was written in the
48.
48. That's what I thought. I was afraid to say it. But yeah, 48. Okay. So he wrote that in 1948. And he predicted a totalitarian society where the common people were being spied on through their television sets. So in 1948, a big part of his novel was a totalitarian government, Big Brother, because that expression, Big Brother is watching you, you know, that comes out of 1984, and Big Brother was watching people through their television screen. And that was like, you know, it was eerie and scary, and it seemed very, very futuristic. I've said this probably countless times in your program. I read the book in third grade, and it's the kind of book that you read, and even in third grade, it gripped me. But I realized before it came out publicly, I realized about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I realized that just on the basis, and I'm obviously not a scientist, but just on the basis of connecting the dots, I believed very strongly, and I didn't say anything about it because I didn't want to be attacked for being like a wacko paranoid conspiracy theorist, you know, with multiple tinfoil hats. But I firmly believed that surveillance technology had arrived at the place that we were being spied upon through the television set and through other devices. And I kept my mouth shut because, you know, there's certain things that you deduce and you're convinced that you know, but you can't say it because if you say it too early on, they'll just think you're completely crazy. So, you know, I then, about 5 years ago or 6 years ago, I started bringing it up and writing about it in my books, and people thought, you know, I was crazy anyway. But then, as you know, with this newest generation of flat screen TVs, the ones that started to be released about a year and a half ago, and there was the big push. First, there was the big push to move to digital screens to begin with, which was conspicuous. But then there was a second push to get the latest technological versions of the flat screen TVs. And there was a big change in the way they were constructed that they were released about a year and a half ago. And the change was, and this was played out on many local news channels as well as network channels, they proved that people were under surveillance while they were watching these new model of flat screen TVs, because hackers across the country had broken in, and they were airing on the internet. They were spying on people. They hacked into it, and they were spying on people through the people's television sets in their bedrooms, in their living room. And sometimes it was humorous, and sometimes it was, you know, like X-rated stuff in the bedroom. And it was proof that those televisions had the capability of surveillance. So, you know, there's a lot of technology out there that does all kinds of things. Now, I'm going to throw something out. I'm going to throw it out in a question, Mark. And I know you will know why I'm doing it, but what do you think about, you know, when there's a presidential election or, you know, a big political speech or debate or whatever, the stakes are very, very high for both sides. And the stakes are very, very high in the primaries, not just the actual debates between the Democrats and the Republicans. The debates between the Republicans and the Republicans and the Democrats and Democrats are very high. Now, what do you think about the possibility of, let's just say hypothetically, there's a bunch of candidates sharing the stage and debating, and all of a sudden one candidate gets up who in every other debate has been relatively articulate and is known as a fairly good debater and handles himself well on the debate stage. But all of a sudden, you're looking at him, and his facial countenance is very strange. He looks unusually disoriented, because people try to be, you know, in a state of focus when they're on the debates. So this particular candidate looks unusually disoriented.
Paul,
yeah.
Okay, Paul, can you hold that thought? We are up against the break.
Right.
We'll touch on this right on the other side. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report with our special guest tonight, Mr. Paul McGuire, paulmcguire.us. Report with our special guest, Mr. Paul McGuire. Visit his website, paulmcguire.us, and his radio show, The Paul McGuire Report, right on Blog Talk Radio. You can get the link from his website or underneath the YouTube video or the Blog Talk description, or just go to paulmcguire.us. Before the break, Paul, you were explaining a situation in which a political candidate was in a debate, and he stood up and his countenance changes, and you were just starting to get into the good parts when we cut the break, so I'm going to turn it back over to you.
Yeah, it's a hypothetical situation, so like we're imagining we're watching a political debate, and I'm giving you an account of what we're looking at. So this political candidate with the other members of his political party is up there. It's his turn to speak in the debate. This candidate has a track record of being a very good debater and always being composed on the stage. But his countenance looks disoriented and confused in his facial countenance. And then as he begins to speak, there's something unusual about the way he's speaking. You can't put your finger on it. He can't seem to remember his thoughts. It's subtle, but it's not subtle. I mean, it's subtle. It's subtle to the extent that a lot of people would probably just say, oh, he's having a bad day or didn't get a good night's sleep. It would be on that level of disorientation and that, or, you know, he had a fight with his wife before he got out on the stage. It would be on that level of disorientation. And so when he tries to speak, instead of being as fluid with his language like he normally is, he can't quite remember things. He's disoriented and he seems muddled and confused. And so his effectiveness in making his presentation is reduced by about 75%. And he has a very bad showing, and his ratings plunge after this debate. Now, hypothetically speaking, we exist in a world with science and technologies, as I've said in it's a constant theme in all of my books, but we exist in a world with constant technologies that are anywhere from whatever people think in terms of the technologies that are available and the sciences that are available, or whatever they see on TV, we're about 100 to 200 years more advanced in our technology and science, 100 to 200 years more advanced in the future. So the technologies and sciences that are made public are the ones that have been around for a while. But the technologies and sciences that are very effective for all kinds of things are secret. They have not been revealed to the public. The ideas about them may have been revealed in science fiction movies and stuff, but the average person is convinced this is still in the world of science fiction and maybe it'll come into reality in 100 years. So there's a low level of awareness among political candidates on both sides of the fence. There's a low level of awareness with their teams, you know, the people that are helping them write, prepare, their security teams, on both sides of the political fence. They have a low level awareness of what exactly is possible. So let's say then, hypothetically, that this disorientation and very poor verbal performance and his ability to remember and string his thoughts together logically is very poor. And then we ask the question, is it because he had a bad night's sleep? Did he just have a bad day? Did he have a fight with his wife? Was he depressed? All of those things could be true. Or was he secretly subjected to any of the following? Could an EMF brainwave have been aimed towards him? And that EMF brainwave could have been aimed towards him from something that nobody would suspect, like a laptop, a cell phone, or whatever, or something installed aimed at the debate stage during construction. You know, it could be hidden in any kind of things. And it would be undetected because nobody would be looking for it. So if you're if you're beaming and focusing this sound wave, which cannot be, it's not audible to the human ear, but that particular frequency of sound waves, like you got alpha, beta, delta, theta, and gamma, and a lot of these things you can't hear with the human ear, but those EMF waves, brain waves, can cause severe cognitive impairment, lack of memory, confusion, disorientation. So is it possible that he was subjected to an EMF wave? Because after all, the stakes are very high and somebody of his same party wants to blow him out of the saddle. Or is it possible that somebody shook his hand and the person shaking his hand had a chemical residue on his hand that was transferred to that candidate by skin contact when they shook hands, or he was given a pen to sign an autograph, and that pen had a slight coating of an imperceptible substance that immediately transferred into the skin, or he walked by somebody and there was a very, very tiny mist in the air, or whatever, or his coffee or soda or drink or whatever, all of these things could have contained a very, very, very low-grade mind-altering substance or a low-grade psychedelic or a cocktail of various chemicals which would have produced a disassociation, a cognitive impairment. But the dosage would have been so low that it would be very subtle. In other words, he's not acting crazy or anything. He's just not at the top of his game, but it's been chemically induced. Now, those are just a couple of the technologies that can be used to produce that. And if you wanted to win, and you were, or somebody came to you and you were ruthless, you might hire somebody who knew how to do that to target somebody on your own party so you could win a debate. So my question, hypothetically, is that possible and is it already in use?
Great questions. And you know, I think, Joe, and everyone listening, I think people would be naive to dismiss that concept. I mean, we know that these types of devices and substances do exist, and even the EMF, the sound wave devices, exist. And they not only exist, but they've been used. And we saw this in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when that was a decade ago. The protesters, and there were sound wave weapons in use or at the ready by the police.
Yeah,
the sound cannons. So the technology is in fact there. You're right.
Yes. Yeah, right. So the technology, we are now in the future, and anybody who doesn't think we're in the future, hasn't been keeping up to speed and doing their homework, because most of this stuff has been discussed openly, one way or another, right, through legitimate information sources. And some of it, I am amazed as I watch movies now at the amount of information that is being released through dramatic movies, science fiction movies, spy, cop show type, programs, that there's this continual release and normalization of, all kinds of, technologies and, enhancements that can be used for surveillance or the battlefield, et cetera, et cetera. The Manchurian Candidate thing. Man, I mean, whether it's Bourne Identity, whether it's the Manchurian Candidate film, or there's countless films where they have Manchurian candidates at work. And there was a movie. Oh, I saw this horrible movie with my son. But what was Batman versus Superman? I think that was it.
Okay.
If that's the one, and I'm not sure, they fly to a polar area, in this polar area, there's an underground military base where they kind of glamorize it. Manchurian candidates are being programmed. Oh, okay. So one of the superheroes, or excuse me, the supervillains, and it was Batman versus Superman. One of the supervillains, in the very beginning of the movie, in the opening scene, this supervillain is being programmed by a scientist. He's strapped to a medical table or whatever, and the scientist is repeating to him over and over again a kind of rhyme or a string of words that don't seem to make sense. A string of words, something like, you know, the Cat in the Hat wears black. It was something innocuous like that. And he's repeating it over and over again to this guy who's strapped onto a medical table, pumped with drugs. And his body has been enhanced so that he's like a super soldier with tremendous muscles and stuff. So then later on in the movie, the scientist repeats that phrase of words that don't make any logical sense, but the words were meant to program him and activate his Manchurian candidate personality, and suddenly he's this ruthless and violent super criminal. But the repetition of these meaningless words trigger it. Now that's based on the actual practice and science of programming a Manchurian candidate. And that's commonly shown in films. I was watching a TV series last night, Madam Secretary, about a female who was the Secretary of State in the White House. And I don't know if it's going to turn out that way, but the episode I saw, there was this weird guy in a car who was in a deep state of emotional distress and conflict. I think he had a tear coming down his face, and he was loading a gun, kind of like the lone gunman. But it seemed to be, and I haven't seen the second episode, but the implication seemed to be that he was a Manchurian candidate. So you add that to the Avengers and Spider-Man and Captain America, and in Captain America and the Avengers and a lot of these pictures, X-Men, what all these films are talking about is genetic engineering, the creating of super soldiers by breeding different types of DNA and chemical enhancements and chip implants to enhance their performance and stuff, and computer brain interfaces. Yeah, people are being very familiarized with it. And that's just not science fiction. And they're only showing you, you know, they're making it sound like, oh, it's in the future, you know, because it's the Avengers or the X-Men. But a lot of it's happening right now. And I think there has to be an awareness among the public, and especially Christians. They really need to understand that science and technologies that they think are science fiction are fully operational around now, and they need to be aware of it because it plays into all these things that we're talking about.
You know, it just reminds me, you mentioned Manchurian Candidate, Frank Sinatra playing Bennett Marco, I think, in this 1962 film.
Yeah, that was the better
quote. Yeah, it was. Raymond Shaw is the kindest, bravest, nicest, most wonderful human being I've ever known, or something to that effect was the quote. You know, it reminds me, as you mentioned, the innocuous phrase or innocuous, you know, whatever command or term, phrase, whatever. Yeah, and boy, programming indeed. Manchurian candidates. It's very disconcerting, too, to think about that. But, you know, Russ Dizdar talks about the multiples, you know, DID and MPD, and it's interesting. I find it very interesting how many federal law enforcement agencies refuse to admit or deny outright that, oh, MPD or multiple personnel dissociative identity disorder doesn't exist, or if it does exist, it's psychosis. It has nothing to do with the satanic realm. Meanwhile, denying, you know, the Satanism aspect of various crimes and such. But I guess I'm getting a little bit off track there. But all of this ties together. I mean, when you're looking at this, there's so much to all of this. But people just, again, are naive to think that this doesn't exist. And so you're right, Paul. And by the way, folks, I'm talking with Paul McGuire, paulmcguire.us, his book, and I highly recommend this. This is not his original book. This is brand new, Prophecy of the Future of America 2016-2017. And this is new original, I mean, this is new content here. So don't think that this is a better version of what you already might already have. No, this is a new version. And I learned a lot of stuff in this, from this book as well. So Prophecy of the Future of America 2016-2017. Go to paulmcguire.us. Go ahead, Paul. I didn't mean to take up your time, but I wanted to mention that because your book touches on all aspects of what we're talking about.
Yeah, and A Prophecy of the Future of America 2016-2017 is complete. It's 100% new material, and it focuses in about what can happen, good and bad, between 2016-2017. So I talk about a lot about the money system and the manipulation of the money system, but I also talk about the supernatural, because the money system is supernatural. And then I talk about how Christians especially need to really learn how to receive God's supernatural provision and supply, which will enable them to overcome in good economic or bad economic times. Now, I'm really serious about that. And it's not, you know, like health and wealth gospel stuff, and it's not prosperity doctrine stuff. But I've been doing a lot of research for a lot of years, and it's reflected in all my books. And the research is based on Bible prophecy, based on Revelation, you know, and Genesis, etc. And you know, the children of Israel. It's based on the Bible. But I have done so much intensive research in an attempt to understand Bible prophecy properly that it has caused me to intensively study economics, spirituality, the occult, secret societies, technology, sciences, and all a very wide spectrum of information. You know, a lot of it I met with skepticism, as I originally would be confronted with something that I heard about. Let's say like the Manchurian candidates, you know, of course. I mean, almost everything I write about, I didn't believe when I started to write about it. It had to be proven to me without a shadow of a doubt. So I've been on this pilgrimage of intensive research my whole life, but it is escalating in the last 5 or 6 years, where all the bits and pieces of information that I've been able to gather, it's like I'm able to connect the dots on a deeper and higher level and a faster level than I ever have in my entire life. And even now I'm writing a brand new book, which is going to stem from the earlier books, like A Prophecy of the Future of America 2016, and the first A Prophecy of the Future of America and Mass Awakening, and some other books. But here's the thing. You were talking about law enforcement not believing in multiple personality disorder and splits and satanic programming and stuff. And I have been studying just recently, in the last couple of weeks, going back to a detailed study of when the fallen angels descended on Mount Hermon, and then the interspecies breeding between fallen angels, and of course the fallen angels gave technology and science and herbal things and a lot of other things the fallen angels gave to mankind on Mount Hermon, which advanced, let's call it, mankind was given fallen angel technology, which explains how the legendary civilizations like Atlantis, which I believe existed, were able to become super civilizations because they had access to very advanced technology and science that was given to them by the fallen angels. Now, when you play the scenario out, and then you do research into Phoenicia, which was around Mount Hermon, and the capital city of Phoenicia was Phoenix, and it was also known as Sidonia, and the capital city of Sidonia was Sidon. And then you learn that the Phoenicians were the original traders and merchants and business people and commerce people, but they were highly, highly gifted traders, builders. They knew all kinds of stuff about advanced mathematics, science, technology, and they had a fleet of ocean-going vessels, and they literally sailed all around the world. In fact, they settled in Phoenix, Arizona. That's why Phoenix, Arizona is called Phoenix, because it was originally settled by the Phoenicians, who were mining it for, I believe it was bronze. So the Phoenicians were mining bronze in an area that is now known as Phoenix, Arizona, and related areas. Now, they also went up to England and Ireland and Europe, and this but they were also the Phoenicians were also they were the product of the interspecies breeding. So the Phoenicians were filled with people that were Nephilim. They had human female DNA and they had fallen angel DNA. So they were that part of that strange ancient hybrid race. Now, what's also interesting is that you go into ancient Canaan with the Canaanites, and Canaan, of course, was the promised land. And when Joshua and Caleb were commanded by God to go into Canaan and slaughter the giants and drive the giants out, but those giants were not just human giants that were large. They were Nephilim. They the people, all the tribes of Canaan, the Canaanites, the Jebusites, the Hittites, the Kazezites, and numerous other tribes, genetically they were Nephilim. And they were the byproduct of breeding between fallen angels and human women. That's why they were giants. That's why they were called the giants of old, because one of the genetic characteristics of Nephilim is that they're physical giants. So the Canaanites also had access to supernatural power, technology, and other things, because there's a connection between the Phoenicians and the Canaanites, and the Sidonians and the Canaanites. In other words, the Phoenicians went into Canaan, and the Phoenicians went into other areas, but especially Canaan. So that entire area was filled with Nephilim, and Joshua and Caleb had to go in there and slaughter and drive out all the giants. Now, but another major characteristic of the Canaanites is that they were Satan worshippers, and they worshipped the pagan gods like Baal, who is Satan, a representation of Satan. They worshipped the pagan god goddess Asherah, who is a Luciferian goddess, and the way they would worship Baal is through sacrificing, burning their children alive in human sacrifice to Baal, who was Satan. And then they would have sexual orgies, take psychedelic drugs, get drunk out of their mind, chant, sing all these rituals, bombastic music, hypnotic music, and that was part of their satanic worship to Baal. Now, they worship Asherah, the female goddess, in a similar fashion, but it was highly sexual in nature. So sexual orgies, eventually Asherah had other names, and temples, and in these temples were temple prostitutes, both male and female, sexual perversion, drugs. When you look at the ancient relics of the statues, both large and small, of the goddess Asherah, you see these very, very large breasts, female breasts. I mean,
hold that thought, Paul. We're up against the break. When we come back, we're going to hit on this more, the Phoenicians and more, with Paul McGuire on this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report.